2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We've got a ton of developing stories today. The Brittany Griner prisoner swap, we've got you covered on that in just a moment. But I'm looking at that video right now from that UDOT traffic camera that's fixated on I-15 and Draper, Dave. And it is a mess. So if you're stuck on an on-ramp or you're stuck in Lehigh trying to get northbound, you're not waiting for a fender bender. The freeway is a disaster.
Yeah, when I drive in and I hear the traffic updates, I kind of tune out all of the other traffic updates that don't apply directly to me. I had no idea it was so bad right now, Debbie. And as we look at the video and we see the pictures, it is an absolute disaster. You're right. This is not a little fender bender that is easily taken care of. Let's go to Heather Kelly right now in the KSL Traffic Center. And Heather, give us an idea. How did this all start? Like, what happened?
All right, well, this started at 11 p.m. last night. We had a semi-tanker driving northbound I-15 in Bluffdale that jackknifed because of the snowy, icy conditions on the roadway. Another semi-truck behind it couldn't stop in time, hit the tanker, which had jackknifed, and then it spilled 1,500 gallons of crude oil onto the freeway. Crews have been spending the last 10 hours trying to clean up all that oil, which is why the entire freeway is still shut down and traffic is backed up 7 miles into Utah County to 1200 North in Lehigh. They are working to open up at least one lane, but they keep pushing back the time when that might reopen.
So, Heather, when I was listening to your traffic reports during Utah's morning news early this morning, the hope was it would be open by 7 a.m. Then that got pushed back, I don't know, maybe 8 a.m. Here we are, 9:10 in the morning, and Cameron Roden, the sergeant with Utah Highway Patrol, just on the line with Tim and Amanda moments ago, saying it would be open mid-morning. In my mind, this is mid-morning. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking for people who work like 8 to 5, maybe 10 or 10:30 is mid-morning.
Okay.
But, you know, my mid-morning is at 7:30 or 8, so I'm not exactly sure. That's a little bit subjective at this point.
Well, I tell you, it is quite a sight right now. Heather Kelly, thank you.
I just actually, Heather, can we get back to you really quickly? I want to make a point here that Utah Highway Patrol also told Tim and Amanda this morning for people not to travel between Utah County and Salt Lake County. So I want you to get into some details right now about, like, what are the options and what are the side streets look like surrounding I-15 as people are wondering what in the world to do?
Well, the only good news I can give people taking side streets is at least they're moving, because northbound I-15 is not right now. But that's it, because it's a parking lot. You're maybe going to move a half a block or so every time the lights turn, because you have traffic at a standstill almost westbound away from I-15 on 2100 North trying to get to Redwood Road. Redwood Road is at a standstill from Saratoga Springs all the way up to 123rd South in the Draper area of the Salt Lake Valley. And then people are taking 123rd, Bangor Highway, 114th, trying to get back onto northbound I-15. And those side streets are all congested as well.
Heather Kelly in the Traffic Center, we know we're going to be getting back to you quite frequently throughout the morning. Thanks so much for the update on the road closure. I-15 closed at Point of the Mountain northbound because of that fuel spill.
KSL's top national story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
President Biden announcing a few hours ago, it was a national address, that Brittany Griner, WNBA star Brittany Griner, will be freed from Russian custody.
So over the last 9 months, you all have been so privy to one of the darkest moments of my life. And so today I'm just standing here overwhelmed with emotions. But the most important emotion that I have right now is just sincere gratitude.
That was Brittany Griner's wife, Sherelle, who has really been just waiting and I would imagine just suffering as this story has just been playing out for months and months.
Let's remind everyone who Brittany Griner is. She's a WNBA basketball star, also Olympian, two-time Olympian for Team USA. She's been held in a penal colony in Russia. She was convicted a few months ago in a Russian courtroom for carting cannabis oil for a vape cartridge in her luggage. She was busted at the airport, and then the dominoes began to fall for her.
Well, and timing was just absolutely horrendous for Brittany Griner because it was just a week or two before the whole invasion of Ukraine. So we've never had like super great relations with Russia, but as soon as Putin invaded Ukraine, we threw in all the sanctions. She became this political pawn for Vladimir Putin, and every step of the way, she was just unfairly treated at every step.
Well, she was playing there, right? She was playing basketball there, because a lot of people are wondering, Dave, like what conditions she was kept in. And also, why was she there to begin with?
Yeah, she plays basketball here in the WNBA, but in the off season, she goes and plays in Russia and has for years. Has done this to make a little extra money. She's very popular there. So when she was traveling in the airport, she was carrying some, I think it was vape cartridges filled with cannabis oil. That was where the crackdown happened.
So we thought this was going to be a two-for-one swap, right? We thought that United States Marine Paul Whelan and Griner would be swapped for a Russian arms dealer in the U.S. that the U.S. has had in custody for a number of years. But Whelan got left behind, and it is just Brittany who's coming back. Here's ABC News' Martha Raddatz shortly after Griner's release was announced this morning.
Paul Whelan, and this is going to be a huge issue. The Whelan family, of course, has put pressure on the administration as well. He was arrested in 2018. He has been held there ever since. He was accused of spying. The Russians claim they found a USB drive on his person that included the names of intelligence officers. He has really been in the news with Brittany Griner. She, of course, has the celebrity. There are so many people who came forward and pleaded for her release. She had the unfortunate timing. She was arrested about a week before the Russians invaded Ukraine and has been held ever since. She, of course, in June said, I did have hashish oil with me, thinking she'd get a lesser sentence. That did not happen. This is, of course, great news, but the Whelan family is going to be hugely disappointed, George.
And so devastated, the Whelan family must look at this and be scratching their heads because their brother, husband has been there far longer than Brittany Griner has. So the question, I think, and this is what Martha Raddatz was alluding to, is why did Brittany Griner get this special treatment? Why was it her that was swapped instead of Paul Whelan?
And I want to know more about who she was swapped for. His name is Victor Boot, a.k.a. the Merchant of Death. The Russian arms dealer we traded, the United States traded, for WNBA star Brittany Griner, who was caught with cannabis oil. So we traded the Merchant of Death for a woman caught with cannabis oil. So if you missed it, the president making the announcement this morning, and we're going to dive into this question next. Did America lose in this swap?
Well, good morning, folks, and it is a good morning. Moments ago, standing together with her wife, Sherelle, in the Oval Office, I spoke with Brittany Griner. She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home. After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances, Brittany will soon be back in the arms of her loved ones, and she should have been there all along.
Dave and Dude.
Janovic.
Get a quick blast of news each morning.
From Ukraine to Utah County.
You'll hear it first.
And accurately.
On KSL.
Listen weekdays between 5 and 9 to Tim and Amanda.
Utah's morning companions for news.
Dave and Janovic.
Dave and Janovic.
KSL's top national story. Special coverage with Dave and Janovic.
You just heard Tim Hughes talk about that prisoner swap in his news update. We're going to take a deep dive on who is this guy? Victor Bout, the merchant of death. He's the Russian arms dealer America swapped for WNBA star turned Russian prisoner, Brittany Griner. And I want to explore this question. What do we feel we sacrificed as a nation to get her back and give him up?
Yeah, it's a great question because in the mid-2000s, he was the most wanted man in the world. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that Osama bin Laden ended up on. So Victor Bout was that level of a criminal. And we caught him, we prosecuted him, we threw him in jail. He's been in prison, and he was supposed to be there for 25 years at least. And we swapped him for a woman that loved Russia. I mean, Brittany Griner was playing basketball in Russia because she loved playing there. And they took her on this, I don't want to say a trumped up charge, but an overcharge of vape cartridges with cannabis oil.
You had said to me earlier today that you remembered this merchant of death who was the prisoner that we had in custody that we swapped Brittany Griner for was actually the inspiration for a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a Nick Cage movie. It was called Lord of War.
There are over 550 million firearms in worldwide circulation. That's one firearm for every 12 people on the planet. The only question is, how do we arm the other 11?
Selling guns is like selling vacuum cleaners. You make calls, pound the pavement. I supplied every army but the Salvation Army.
This man was providing plane loads of military-grade arms to some of the most dangerous spots in the world.
Here's how the sting operation went down to take him into custody. It was U.S. agents from the DEA, who swarmed into Thailand, and this was in the mid-2000s, after a ruse to get him to Thailand, Victor Bout. They lure him there on a ruse, and then once he admits, probably on tape, doesn't know he's going to be being recorded. I'm just guessing that he can. Yeah, I can drop a bunch of arms in the middle of Colombia via an airdrop. And then, bam, the agents swarm in, take him into custody. Oh, he's supposed to serve 25 years. But now he's out. Let's get with Ryan Vogel. He's associate professor and director of the Center for National Securities at Utah Valley University. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Did this one shock you?
Glad to be here. A little bit. You know, if you remember back a few years ago, this kind of reminds me of the exchange that we had for Bo Bergdahl, who was a U.S. soldier who had been captured by the Taliban, 10, 15 years ago. And we swapped five high-level Taliban officials for him. And I remember at the same time, you know, people were upset about that exchange, because these guys were bad guys. You know, these five Taliban guys were senior officials who now make up some of their current government officials.
Wow. And
it's a high price to pay, and that's what we paid here as well.
Ryan Vogel joining us right now from UVU. You really run the Center for National Security Studies. So President Biden, I want to play a little soundbite for you. He was talking about a letter he had received from Brittany Griner.
She wrote to me back in July. She didn't ask for special treatment, even though we've been working on a release from the day one. She requested a simple quote, "Please don't forget about me and the other American detainees. Please do all you can to bring us home." We never forgot about Brittany. We've not forgotten about Paul Whelan, who's been unjustly detained in Russia for years.
I hear this special treatment, and she says she doesn't want special treatment. But when you have LeBron James and Steph Curry and the entire sports world tweeting about you, free Britney, how can she, in my view, it seems like she absolutely receives special treatment because of her fame and stardom.
Sure. I mean, I think when you have someone that's high profile, you have these cases, you know, every few years where people are kidnapped or they're unjustly sentenced or sometimes, you know, they just receive harsh sentences in countries like in this situation. But if you're high profile, if there's a good story behind you and there's a lot of support, sure, that makes the pressure a little bit higher on American officials to bring you home. And I definitely think that happened here.
What is this for America, in your view, Professor Vogel? Is this a win or a loss for America?
Well, like a lot of things, I think it's a little bit of both because, you know, American citizens want to know that their government will protect them. And that is what happened here. You know, the American government secured her release. It just did come at a very high cost. You know, you could argue that Victor Bout has been out of the game for 15 years, that he's not going to be nearly the menace or the threat that he was before. But that's really speculative. We don't know that. You know, we know that he was a former Soviet military officer that had tremendous success in the illegal arms trade all across the world, supplying, you know, the worst kind of actors with weapons. Whether he can jump back in that or whether it's just unfair that he didn't pay his full penalty. You know, he got about half of his sentence in before he was released. You know, those are losses for the United States. So it's really kind of, like I said, with the Bo Bergdahl case, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, you know, it's a mixed bag. You're glad to see Americans at home, you know, back home with their families. And yet, you know, we have to sometimes pay a pretty heavy price for it.
Well, I wonder about the policy then. Are these prisoner swaps, are they good or are they a dangerous policy? Because as you have laid out, this sounds like we're getting back a good basketball player and an American. That's great news. But what we're giving up, I wonder how many other lives are in threat or in danger now because of the people we've had to trade back.
Sure. I mean, it's the situation you always have with hostage negotiations. And, you know, anytime you negotiate with a group that does this kind of thing, you do imperil people in the future. At the same time, you know, it is the government's responsibility to protect their nationals. And I would hope if I were taken, you know, into custody in Russia, that my government would fight for me and do what it could to you know, get me home within reason, right? And I guess that's the issue here. The problem really is, though, that, you know, when we negotiate with these kinds of countries, they don't want the similar type of people back, right? They're not looking for their Brittany Griner. They're looking for...
They're looking for their merchant of death.
Exactly.
Professor Vogel.
That's not an equivalent. Yeah, right. That's exactly right.
Right. That is not an equivalent.
No.
Thank you. Great conversation as always. Professor Ryan Vogel of Utah Valley University. He's very involved with national security. Well,
we're talking about Brittany Griner. We're talking about Paul Whelan. They're not the only Americans in Russia being detained. And I just wonder why Brittany Griner got that treatment, why she was, after, you know, months versus years, why she was the lucky winner. And I understand there's politics going here, and I understand there was political pressure, but I if I'm the family of Paul Whelan, if I'm the family of other detainees, I've got to be heartbroken that Brittany Griner was able to skip to the front of the line.
Let's ask our listeners how they feel about it. 801-575-TALK. Is this a dangerous policy for the U.S.? Or should the U.S. be in the business of prisoner swaps? Here's your chance to weigh in. You're texting us like crazy about this, but we want your phone calls. 801-575-TALK.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM. KSL's top national story, special coverage with Dave and Dejanovic.
If you were tuned into KSL News Radio listening to Tim and Amanda at about 6:30 this morning, you heard the president's announcement live that WNBA star Brittany Griner is on her way home. Released from a Russian prison in a swap for the Merchant of Venice. Yeah, that's this guy's name, Victor Bout.
Merchant of Death.
Merchant of Death. Did I say Merchant of Venice? Sorry. My goodness. Merchant
Good play,
of Death.
Though.
Yeah, nice try, Deb. Victor Bout. He's from Russia. Snagged by the DEA. That's right. U.S. agents flew over to Thailand, set up a ruse, get this guy in custody in 2008. You said, Dave, he's one of the worst of the worst. And one of the questions that we want to know is, do you feel like this is a dangerous policy, this prisoner swap policy? Or should the U.S. be in the business of prisoner swaps? We're taking your live calls in just a moment.
Yeah, 801-575-TALK. And when I compare, because you can't help but compare who we got and who we had to give up. I love Brittany Griner. She's a great basketball player. I've followed her since her days at Baylor. She's a great basketball player.
I didn't know she played at Baylor.
Yeah, did Baylor, WNBA, and then she would play in Russia. Yeah, okay. She's a great basketball player. We gave up an arms dealer that was on the FBI's most wanted list, like at the top of the list. Like, that is not a fair swap. Like, because now that you've made this swap, this is the standard. You steal one of our, you know, you take one of our Americans under custody on some garbage charge, and we have to give up somebody that is a world-class horrible person.
But if we do away with this policy, if the White House no longer negotiates with foreign governments for Americans, we leave behind three people in Russia.
Yeah.
Right? Not only U.S. Marine Paul Whelan, who's been in custody for 5 years now. They've been working to get him out, too. And we, in fact, thought this would be he would be part of this swap, but it was a one-for-one and not a two-for-one. But there's other people we don't ever talk about who are stuck in Russian custody.
Yeah, there's a 61-year-old named Mark Fogel who was detained for almost an identical thing. He had a small amount of medical marijuana that he used for chronic back pain. This is according to The Hill. He's 61 years old. He was sentenced to 14 years at a labor camp. And that's where Brittany Griner was. She was at a labor camp at the Gulag, right? This was a terrible place, totally unfair. I understand that. But what about Mark Fogel? Mm. What about Paul Whelan?
Brian from Pleasant Grove, are you on board with this prisoner swap policy, or is that something the U.S. should back away from?
I think we should get all U.S. citizens back. But on the question of why Griner and not Whelan, okay. Whelan served the country in the military. Griner did not. That's why Bozo Biden preferred Griner, period.
I do scratch my head. I mean, we're in this world where how is Paul Whelan, the Marine, not prioritized over a basketball player or a science teacher like Mark Fogel?
Leverage. Russia's keeping him as leverage.
But
they want somebody else back, and they want somebody else back with a big name. They don't want their basketball star, not that we have a basketball star from Russia, but you know that they don't want that person back. They want somebody big. And so they're keeping the Marine in custody until they can get somebody else. I mean, why, if you're Putin, would you swap two for one?
Well,
you wouldn't.
No, you do. You have to. And this.
No, you're not going to give back two Americans for one if you can get a one for one swap. That's Putin's. Look, you can say what you want about him, but he's not going to go negotiate so Russia loses in this. He wants to make it look like America lost.
Well, you could get Paul Whelan, you could get Mark Fogel, and you could get back Brittany Griner, and Russia still wins with the Merchant of Death. Now, Griner is a WNBA star. She understands trades. If you're the Utah Jazz, you don't just make a trade for a trade's sake. You make one that is benefiting you or at least somewhat fair. There is nothing fair about this. I love that she's back. That's great news, but it is not fair. What would have been even in the conversation affair is getting back every American for this one deplorable.
We just spoke with Professor Ryan Vogel, UVU professor of national studies, national security studies. He said, look, these kinds of prisoner swaps, they are a mixed bag.
It's a mixed bag. You're glad to see Americans at home, you know, back home with their families. And yet, you know, we have to sometimes pay a pretty heavy price for it.
Let's jump out to Cache Valley. Paul, what do you think? What do you think about this trade?
Isn't Mitzi the one who dissed the American country, United States of America? Didn't she kind of downplay America?
Yeah, I mean, there. I think what you're referring to is she knelt for the national anthem. She was part of the Black Lives Matter protests.
She goes over there. She gets picked up on maybe frivolous charges, but if you're in a foreign country, I think you need to mind your business and you need to obey the law and you need to not have any contraband on you at all.
Paul, thank you so much for your phone call. I want to get to Linda from Salt Lake City. What are your thoughts on this prisoner swap policy?
I'm really glad that Brittany's coming back. And I just remember listening to you and Dave, both Debbie, about when how she was behind bars and it had her in the courtroom behind bars and just how sad she looked. And I'm just so glad she's coming back. And I don't know what the deal is with the other people, but I just really, my heart just was really went out to her.
Linda, thank you. That was a few months ago when she was being sentenced, and it was a very, very, very emotional sight to see her behind bars.
One final call, Marin in Centerville. What do you think about this policy of swapping prisoners?
Are you there?
Marin, are you with us? Calling from Centerville.
Hi.
How's it going?
Hi there. This is funny. Yeah, I was just so happy to hear the news this morning. And I think there are always going to be politics involved when prisoners are swapped. But I think this is something that we should all just be happy about and just rejoicing. A family's been reunited, an American's coming home. It's Christmas time. I hope that's what we can be thinking and talking about and celebrating this morning.
Thank you for the phone call. We appreciate that. I'm absolutely ecstatic for the Griner family. You know, this is absolutely fantastic. What I worry about is, does this set a precedent? Does this tell Russia that you can just pluck any American on any charge and you'll be able to get back somebody awful? And not just Russia. This could be, the Taliban. This could be Al-Qaeda. This could be ISIS. This is what scares me. If you are in the business of swapping an American for four or five terrorists like Bo Bergdahl, then this is scary. This is a win for Brittany Griner. This is good news for her. I'm not sure it's good news for the nation.
We are following a developing story. You heard it here first on KSL News Radio moments ago. The House, the U.S. House, passing legislation protecting same-sex and interracial marriages. President Biden expected to sign it practically immediately. Dave and I are digging into that story right now. We'll bring you more information throughout the morning.
Dujanovic.
Start your mornings productively with important updates on breaking news,
traffic, and reliable weather.
You'll get it all on KSL from 5 to 9 with Tim and Amanda.
Utah's morning companions for news.
Next.
Dave and Dujanovic.
We're going to talk about a brand new situation going on at the FDA that has to do with LASIK surgery. Of course, LASIK has been around since the late 90s. I mean, if you don't know what it is, it's corrective surgery for your eyes, right? So you can ditch your glasses, your contacts, wake up and see everybody, right? Supposedly. Did you have LASIK?
No. I've thought about it probably for 30 years.
Have you really?
25 years, yeah. I mean, I'm so tempted because I can't wake up, Deb, and my very first move is put on my glasses. I can't get out of bed without glasses on.
Well, in a minute, I'm going to ask you how bad your eyesight is. Let's do a comparison, a side-by-side comparison. Because I feel like sometimes my eyesight's a lot worse than yours. and then you're like...
They're both pretty terrible.
I see your glasses, and I'm like,
They're like binoculars. Like, you got two telescopes attached to your eyeballs.
Look, don't be ashamed of that, David. You're in good company. I have converted Coke bottles into eyeglasses over the years myself. So we're going to dive into this New York Times story. They say the Times says they have a draft from the FDA that wants to make sure that patients are aware of the complications.
Yes. Yeah, and that's always been kind of what has held me back. I've been a little nervous because the idea of somebody cutting into my eye, even if they're using a laser, kind of freaks me out.
Let's jump over to CBS this morning. They spoke to a couple of LASIK patients who've had some bad experiences. I have not heard this sound clip yet, so I'm curious to know myself what these LASIK patients are saying about their bad experiences.
You really have to understand you're risking your only pair of eyes.
It's a devastation that I can't even explain. Things would appear double. Ooh. Around the lights were like having starbursts.
And this starburst, I've heard this before from people that have received LASIK. This was a few years old, but again, this has been around. This procedure has been around since 1998. They've done more than 20 million LASIK procedures. Now, the FDA has found that, and they've done surveys on this, that patients are happy with LASIK about 95% of the time. But yeah, you do hear these instances where people, they give the double vision, there's some pain in the eye, whatever it might be. And the FDA just wants to make sure, I think, does everyone know that this is not just a, you know, we're not a simple procedure. This has some downsides, even though largely it's fairly safe.
So here's what the FDA is proposing. Let's skip to that. That there is a patient decision checklist that describes the LASIK surgery, talks about that corneal tissue is vaporized, the corneal nerves may not fully recover from the incisions. And a couple of things can happen because of that. Dry eyes. Have you ever had dry eyes?
I don't, not I to did. This level.
Oh, you would know. You would know.
Really?
Dave.
Can hardly blink.
I have a ton of other eye problems. So don't go, oh yeah, she's so lucky her dry eyes went away, because there's a lot of other things going on in these eyeballs of mine. But I remember once I was on a story for KSL 5 TV. I was up in Ogden. I had driven my personal vehicle to meet the photographer up there. And I called the photographer and I said, I gotta put our interview on hold because I gotta dive into like the Costco here, run around and find some sort of eye drop that will deal with my dry eyes, because I could hardly keep them open. They burned so bad. They burned so bad. So if you don't have dry eyes and then all of a sudden after LASIK surgery, which you think is going to be the, you know, light bulb moment for your eyesight, then all of a sudden you got dry eyes, it is a bear to deal with. Also, chronic pain. And because of my glaucoma in my right eye and the medications I've had to use since I was 30 years old, I'm now 55, 25 years, I have chronic pain in my right eye. So these are nothing to be like taken lightly.
Yeah.
And I would want to know about that going in.
You have one set. You have one set of eyes.
Reminder.
And I think that's what is a little bit scary. Now, that being said, when you've done a procedure 20 million times and 95% of the time people are happy with it, then maybe you're willing to take the risk. And I think a lot of people obviously are very comfortable with it, but it does, I think it's just very important to make sure that when you're going in, that you know the risks specifically.
What were the risks? Let's talk about this. What were the risks that mentally talked you out of getting LASIK surgery?
Okay, so one of the things that happens sometimes is a double vision. And I've worn glasses since I was a preteen.
You heard that from a friend?
Yeah, I had a friend that had gotten LASIK, and he said, I had some blurriness at night, kind of a haloing around lights.
Yeah, I have that.
And also some double vision. And I started experiencing double vision a few years ago where I guess my two eyes kind of weren't bringing the image together, which your brain kind of does naturally. And it was because my prescription was off. So when I went in and I got it, the prescription fixed, it kind of took care of that. But it was extremely disorienting to have this double vision. And I thought, if I couldn't correct that
after LASIK,
it would just be a disaster.
Yeah, I've been graced with halos during night driving because of glaucoma, because mm-hmm. creates a pressure buildup of the liquid in your eye on your optic nerve. And mine's treated now, of course. I treat it every single day, twice a day, with a multitude of eye drops I put in. It's a cocktail of eye drops. But occasionally when the eye drops are kind of wearing off at night, if I'm driving, I don't do a lot of night driving. You're lucky. But this morning, for example, I was driving in. It's dark.
Yeah.
I will see halos, and those are super annoying. Have you ever been swimming like in a super chlorinated pool, and then you go out at night and your eyes are like kind of blurry?
Yeah.
That's what it's like all the time. So if that's one of the side effects, no thank you. No thank you. I haven't had LASIK surgery either for some of the reasons you talked about. Some same reasons. This texter at 57500 on the KSL text line says, LASIK in 2005, enjoyed for several years of a 2010 vision. Congratulations. Now it's probably 2030.
That's still a home run.
Yeah. Weighed the risks and decided to go with it.
Some people are also concerned about the cost of LASIK, but I will tell you this, Deb, since I was 11 or 12 years old, contacts, glasses, checkups, I've spent tens of thousands of dollars on my eyes. So yeah, maybe a couple thousand dollars per eye to get LASIK done. At least from a cost perspective.
Seems like a deal.
Yeah, seems like a deal.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on any smart speaker and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio, Utah's all-day companion for news. Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Here's the headline from the Deseret News that we're going to talk about right now. Should U.S. troops discharged for refusing COVID-19 vaccines be reinstated with back pay? Senator Mike Lee thinks so.
Yeah, I'm with him. Absolutely. I think now that we're not in the middle of the pandemic and the crisis, I think we're starting to think a little bit more clearly and realizing that, you know, forcing people into making certain decisions about their health, it's just we overstepped. And I think this would be a step in the right direction.
I think the Department of Defense, can we confirm this? The Department of Defense just did away with the mandate, right?
Yes.
They did. Okay.
Yes.
They just did away with the mandate. And Senator Lee says, you know, he's happy the Department of Defense saw the light about this issue, but
I do think that we still have to worry about those who have already been fired. We owe it to them. Our national security depends on it in many ways. The recruitment is down. Morale is down in part because of stuff like this. And we need to deal with this issue now rather than on the basis of some prospective promise that they'll treat fairly those whom they have treated most unfairly with this policy.
And how many people were involved in this?
Lots. So I've got the data from, it's in the Deseret News, 3,717 Marines. And I'm going to be specific because I think when you serve your country, you ought to be counted.
Everyone.
Everyone. 1,816 soldiers and 2,064 sailors have been discharged for refusing to get vaccinated, according to the story in the Deseret News and Reuters.
So nearly 8,000 of our servicemen and women have been discharged for not getting vaccinated.
Braden Wayman, good morning.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. You're an Army veteran. You live in Utah. You're no stranger to the show. We always appreciate you taking a few minutes out to chat with us and giving us your perspective. Were you ever forced to get vaccinated in the military?
So, yeah, when you join, you go through a whole line of, you know, they inject you in both arms. You take a step forward, they hit you again. You take a step forward, they hit you again.
Ooh.
And then also when I was deployed, they give you a whole new set of shots.
Did you get any say in it? Like, did you get to check the ones you wanted or didn't want?
Well, so interesting. I like to refuse the flu shot for the first couple of years, and they were okay with that. Policy changed throughout it, and then my last couple of years, they enforced it. There were two instances that I had a problem with it. I was one of the first groups into Iraq in 2003, and in the middle of combat, the medics would come, and we were given anthrax vaccines. And I think my total was around 8. They did away with that later in that summer, but there was no anthrax in Iraq. There was no threat, and that I had a problem with that one, but I didn't refuse it. And then they also give you malaria pills, and the order is you take one malaria pill, I think it's mefloquine, once a day for your whole deployment. Now, looking back, that's not how it's supposed to go. So those were the two issues I had during my career. And I've heard they've caused issues, but I can't speak of that knowledgeably. I don't know what kind of issues.
Braden, as a military vet, do you agree with Senator Mike Lee on this? Do you think that these individuals who were discharged for refusing the COVID-19 vaccine should be reinstated with back pay?
I don't. And the bottom line is that the soldiers and sailors were given a direct lawful order to take it. Whether it's right or wrong is up for debate. I'm glad the mandate's gone. But in speaking with my brother, who's also active duty right now, it boils down to, well, if they refuse this order and we go overseas, what other orders are they going to refuse?
What's next? Oh, that's a great question, Braden. Thank you for joining us. I think a lot of people are wondering, like, what kind of latitude and freedom do these military personnel have when it comes to receiving vaccinations? Braden, thanks for joining us.
We're going to return to that conversation in just a moment. But first, we've got a developing story in Washington, D.C., where we got word just a little while ago that the U.S. House of Representatives has passed a bill to protect same-sex marriage and also interracial marriage. And that bill is heading over to President Biden's desk.
M. Nguyen joins us right now from ABC News. M., I can't say we're super surprised, but can you update us on what's going on?
Right. So just around 11:20 a.m. this morning, so not too many minutes ago, the House did pass the final version of the Respect for Marriage Act. And there was a lot of celebrations on the floor when this happened. A few minutes ago, actually, Speaker Pelosi and Senate Leader Chuck Schumer held this presser to celebrate the bill and to send this bill off to President Biden's desk, who is expected to promptly sign it. Now, remember, this already passed in the Senate, and actually 12 GOP senators sided with Democrats at that time. This time, 39 Republicans in the House voted for this bill, so it is certainly bipartisan. And this legislation would lock in protections for same-sex and interracial marriages, but it's a little more narrow than the Supreme Court rulings that we've seen in the past. This one particularly just ensures that the federal government and all states respect same-sex and interracial marriages and equal marriages from other states that do allow this type of wedding to happen, do allow it to be legally legal in that state. So it's a big win for Democrats who sought this move after Roe versus Wade was overturned. Of course, during that time, it sparked concerns that other rights were in jeopardy. And Justice Clarence Thomas at that time indicated that after Roe v. Wade was over, he would consider, or at least he says that the justices should consider, the other rulings that would guarantee the national right for same-sex marriage. And that's why Democrats quickly got in there and said, okay, let's get this bill on the floor.
Before we let you go, I know you got a busy day back there in D.C. My understanding of this bill is that it would not require states legalize same-sex marriage, but it would require each state to recognize another state's legal marriage. Is that accurate?
Exactly.
Is my read of that correct? Okay.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's why it's different from just codifying a Supreme Court ruling, which allows same-sex marriage nationwide. This one, because there was negotiations in the Senate, that's why it's coming back to the House. It actually passed the House first before going to the Senate. Now it's coming back to the House because they wanted to make sure that it's just other states respecting marriages from states that do allow marriages such as same-sex and interracial marriages to be legal in those states.
M. Nguyen from ABC News. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for the update, M. Of course, when President Biden signs it, we will make sure we update our listeners as well. But it looks like that's going to happen possibly sometime today after the House did pass that bill. and it's already, as she said, been passed by the Senate. We're continuing our discussion right now about these people in the military who were discharged because they refused to get a COVID-19 vaccine. We just heard from Army vet Braden Wayman. He's from Utah, calls the show from time to time to fill us in and give us some insight on different things that go on in the military. And he's, and I'm actually going to take his side on this. He said he does not agree with Senator Mike Lee, who's stated that those who were discharged for refusing a COVID-19 vaccine should be not only be reinstated, but should be reinstated with back pay. Braden said no. No, he said, because they were given a lawful order at the time to take a vaccine and they refused. And his concern is, you're serving in the military. If you refuse to take a vaccine, what are you going to refuse next? So I'm on Team Braden. It sounds like you're on Team Mike Lee on this.
Yeah, you can't refuse orders. Oh, that's a pretty simplistic way to look at it. Maybe it is just so cut and dried.
So let's take phone calls. 801-575-TALK. Do you agree with Senator Mike Lee's position on this, or are you going to side with Army vet Braden Wayman? Taking your live phone calls in a matter of minutes.
Dave and Dujanovic.
We are literally staring and not blinking at a UDOT traffic camera right now, fixated on I-15 and Draper northbound, which has been closed since 11 o'clock last night when a couple of semi-trucks crashed and all the snow we were having. And crude oil, Heather Kelly told us earlier, 1,500 gallons of crude oil went all over the freeway. That thing's a mess, Dave. But the moment it opens, and Heather's giving us hope it could happen any minute now, we're going to take you live to the traffic center.
It seems like every time we talk to Heather, the line, the backup gets farther and farther. It was like 5 miles, then 7 miles.
Oh, yeah.
The last update was 10 miles long, the backup.
Yeah, and all the side streets have been a mess all morning long. UDOT initially had reported to us that they were thinking that this could be open by 7 o'clock this morning. Just looking at this mess on I-15 that they've been cleaning up all morning long, 7 a.m. was a moonshot.
Very optimistic.
And here we are, almost 12 hours later, and the freeway northbound I-15 is still closed. But we think you deserve to know the moment it opens because you've been so patient all morning long, even though some of y'all have turned around on the on-ramp and gone the wrong way back onto the freeway just to get off the off-ramp. We forgive you. Hopefully you didn't cause any other accidents. Don't ever do that again, but we'll let you know ASAP. Taking live phone calls right now. Dave, what's your thought on Senator Mike Lee's call to reinstate those in the military who were discharged because they would not take a COVID vaccine?
Yeah, there was about 8,000 Marines, soldiers, sailors that were dismissed because they wouldn't want to get vaccinated. So Senator Lee says, reinstate them, give them back pay. What he's saying is the U.S. Army and, I guess, military in general overstepped. And we asked them and are requiring them to do things they were uncomfortable with for their health. And that because we can see now that is kind of damaging our military, losing that many people, maybe we need to make some reparations.
Well, I happen to agree with Braden Wayman. He's the Army veteran we talk to from time to time here on the show. He lives in Utah. He's served our country for a number of years. And he said, no, they should not be reinstated with back pay.
An order is an order.
An order is an order. And they defied orders. And if they defy that order to get a vaccine, what order are they going to defy when we ship them overseas? 801-575-TALK. Steve from Orem, you're an Army vet. You served for 23 years.
Yes. I have a little different look
sure.
at it. Hopefully I can. I was in Vietnam and we had to take a lot of shots. I'm not going to tell you how many, but over 23 years, I have 3 shot records. I don't know if you know what they look like. Full of shots because I've been all over the world. I won't take time to tell you what I did, but I believe that they shouldn't get back pay, but let them back in because our military is hurting so badly. I do understand the reason that they didn't want to take the shots, but I've not had any trouble. I've had all the shots. I think each individual is a little different depending on what their makeup is, what their DNA is, yeah. what their family history.
Steve, how, yeah, when you're when you're discharged from the military like that, kind of like, you know, mid-service, what does that do? Do you lose retirement benefits? Do you not get a VA care? Do you happen to know?
Yes, you do get VA care. It's a little hard, but you can force the issue. It depends on how you're discharged. If you're discharged for medical reasons, which I doubt that this was the reason, then they'll still get medical care. But yeah, you do. Your retirement is waived.
Wow, retirement was waived.
So that's a bad deal. Of course, it depends on when they left.
Sure.
I mean, were they discharged at 15 years, at 18 years?
Right.
Five years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steve, great. Thank you. We know you stayed on the line for quite a while to talk to us about that. Appreciate your time and appreciate your service.
Gary in West Jordan, National Guard member, retired?
Yeah, actually on terminal leave, almost 21 years retiring.
Okay, where do you land on this then?
Senator Lee, I think, nailed it. I mean, it's not like he's sitting in an office and he hasn't talked to these soldiers, you know, sailors and airmen. He has her first line supervisors and leaders, and he knows what, I mean, this is a job for people. This is their way of living. And so just to cut them off has caused all sorts of mental anguish. And, I mean, you can imagine in times where we got inflation, we're not just being told, hey, you're done. Go find another job. Sorry. And a lot of the guys I know, here's the thing. Yes, it is a dividing thing. And yes, it was an order. But the lawful part is where I have seen people really struggle, because the people that I knew in my squadron that were not going to deal with this were some of our deepest thinkers, some of our most intelligent leaders. And they were looking at the lawfulness of this going, I don't think they did their due diligence on this mandate. I don't think this drug or this, you know, the way that they put this out, it was kind of, you know, fire and forget, fast and furious. And I don't think the due diligence was there. And I'm not willing to put my health or my principles on the line because, you know, someone up the chain decided that, you know, that this was what we needed to do, you know, in a quick manner for something like this. So I think they need to be reinstated. And if it was an honorable situation, definitely give them back pay. Our military is suffering. Tell you what, man, we are scrambling to recruit now, and I've never, it's in 20 years, it hasn't been as bad. So,
Gary, thank you. Yeah. That's great insight. We're going to try to get to as many phone calls as we can. Linda in Salt Lake City. Linda, what do you think about reinstating these service members?
No, I'm with Debbie. Of course, I'm for the shots. And I really believe that if everybody would get their shots, we'd be rid of this disease. And I really believe that. So,
thanks, Linda. Appreciate your phone call. Let's get over to Tamara. Tamara, you're in the military? Or is it?
Tamara, are you with us? Sorry, you're kind of muffled. I don't know if we're missing a microphone or something. Tamara, are you with us?
No, I think we've lost Tamara, so we've kind of gotten through all our callers right now. Do we have any other callers? Is Tamara the last one on the line?
Yeah, we appreciate those phone calls. I think this is a tough one. This is tricky because, especially from the military, when you're given an order, you follow it.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Now,
that's where I am.
The caveat is, if it's a legal and lawful order, can you demand someone get a vaccine?
Where does it stop? Because when Braden called, he said he had to get vaccinated against anthrax. You know, so where do you draw the line at COVID but not anthrax? What about the malaria pills? I mean, where do you draw the line?
David in California, last caller. What do you think?
Thanks. 100 years ago in 1918, we had the famous, called the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
It actually started in Kansas and got spread by the military that was going over to fight in World War One. So the Spanish flu got spread by the military, and I totally oppose this this reinstatement. I think they're foolish to capitulate to people that are dumb. I've gotten all the vaccines. My shoulder never even hurt. I've never even had the sniffles. And out here in San Francisco, we've got so many millionaires that didn't want to catch it. We made sure that the homeless, that the immigrants were a sanctuary city. Everybody could get the vaccine for free, and you can still get tested for free. And, you know, our death count is far less than I was looking at North Carolina stats. They've got 3 million people in North Carolina. They've got 28,000 dead. In three counties here in Northern California, we've only got 4,000 dead for 3 million people. So it's preposterous. That earlier caller saying it was the smart people that were refusing to get it, good luck with that one.
David, thank you for your phone call. And thanks, folks, for chiming in.
Dave and Degenovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
I want to continue the conversation we started earlier this week about financial infidelity in marriages and in relationships. The average Utahn would reconsider their relationship if their partner spent $5,000 without chatting it out with them first. And that's according to a survey by Quote Wizard, but according to Dave Noriega, that dollar amount's laughable.
That's crazy. That I don't know. I just look at it and I think $5,000 would end your marriage. Like you would break up over $5,000.
There, I got a lot of feedback from our listeners on this topic. Some had divulged to me some financial secrets that had gone on with their significant others. Others talked about their significant other overspending. Another one said that conversations about money become horribly complex and they don't end well. So they try to navigate through it. So everybody, you know, I guess your one side's probably walking on eggshells and the other one's smacking them with a howitzer.
That's super true. Like, there is nothing that is an instant fight more than talking about the family finances.
Really?
Like, that is an instant fight.
I think it's in-laws. I think that's number one. Oh, and finances is
way easier. Way easier to badmouth your mother-in-law. Though mine's great. But
51%, Dave, avoid talking about money with their partner altogether because it will lead to an argument. So that goes to your point.
Yeah, I think the argument, and then what happens is because you don't talk about it, you're not on the same page, you're not sure where you're at, and then when things just kind of pop up, it boils over. $5,000, though, if your partner spends $5,000 without you knowing it, I have no problem with having a good old fight over it.
But not a divorce.
Somebody's sleeping on the couch for sure.
All right, let's get Professor Dave Schramm at Utah State University, family life professor, also an extension specialist with Utah State University, live on the line. Good morning, Professor.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Dave and Debbie. This is such a hot topic.
It is. So let's start with the thing we just left off with, and that is how do you have those conversations about money? What do you suggest that it doesn't lead to a big old family dispute?
Yeah, you know what? You really have to. It starts really early on, and you need to bring this up when it's not in the heat of the moment. Not when you look at the credit card bill and you say, "Oh my goodness, what have you done?"
Oh,
you need to sit down and have these discussions and say, "Hey, what's an acceptable limit?" You know, without talking to you about, especially the holiday time, we kind of want to do some of this, but we really get into trouble when one or both just start racking the credit cards and neither are aware of it.
I totally agree. I mean, this is the prime time where we can justify spending so easily, right? Because typically we're not spending on ourselves. We're spending on our spouse or our kids or family members or friends. It's very easy. But when it does start getting to a point where you can't ignore it or you can't just wave it, what do you do? Like, I don't know. How do you keep it from going nuclear?
Yeah. Again, it comes back to honesty, to discussions, and not – a lot of us are conflict avoiders. At least I know I am. You know, I don't want to bring it up. And what it does, it starts to create this silent resentment, and then we – it gets into what I call loyalty leaks, and I start, you know, doing things behind my partner's back because I know they're not a spender, but – we have to understand the intention is good. We want to purchase something often for others, but it's when we start going overboard and that adrenaline, you know, kicks in and that cortisol when we make these purchases, then it's time to really sit down and talk and sometimes even a professional help. If there's a pattern, that's what it really is. If this is a pattern and it's sneaky and we've got a credit card, we've got these purchases we're not talking about, then, we've really got to sit down and have a heart-to-heart conversation about what's acceptable and what's not.
Professor Schramm with Utah State University Family Life Professor on the line with us after a couple of days ago. We were talking about this study that came out, the survey that came out that said people would leave their partners, at least Utahns would leave their partners over $5,000 in secret spending if their partner had spent $5,000 secretly. And I've heard from so many of our listeners on this. I have had people stop me in my tracks to talk to me about this. And one woman said, it's not about the money, it's about the secret spending. What are your thoughts on that and how to deal with that?
Yeah, all of us do things for reasons that make sense to us. And so when someone violates that, she's true. It's not about money in a sense. It's what money means. And it's about the secretive nature of that. And anytime we do something behind our spouse or their partner's back that we feel like we probably shouldn't be doing this, that's the first sign that, yeah, this is don't go down this road. I know a couple, for example, he knew that she wouldn't want to go and get the solar for their house, but he knew it was a great deal. He didn't talk to her about it. $50,000. And yeah, there was a few nights on the couch and a lot of discussion. No, they didn't break up over $50,000 even, but that's a pretty major purchase decision. So sitting down and talking about these things is critical.
Yeah, and it's not exactly a secret when she drives up and she sees these panels.
Yeah.
On her roof. And like, am I at the right house? I think this is my house. I'm pretty sure this is my house. What did my husband go and spend that money for? Let's say somebody is caught in a secret in a relationship and they want to divulge the secret. Before we let you go, Professor, how do they start that conversation so that conversation doesn't go nuclear?
Yeah, you know, it's all about a soft startup. It's finding the right time that you're not tired, hungry, you know, lonely, any of those types of feelings. You know, maybe the kids are in bed and say, hey, honey, it's a very humble approach that says, I really need to talk to you about something. I feel awful about this. And maybe, you know, sit down and explain it. Information really helps. And so getting all the complete story and divulging everything. Don't hold anything back. Don't kind of test the waters and then, well, I have this too. Unload everything is very, very important.
Don't be tired, hungry, or lonely. I wouldn't even have thought about that, but that makes total sense to me. Thank you so much, Dave Schramm, who's a professor at Utah State University, also a host of the podcast Stronger Marriage Connection, does that with Dr. Liz Hale on KSL Podcast. Thank you for joining us.
I don't want to take calls on this, Dave, but I'm a little perplexed as to what I want to get to the bottom of with our callers. So I'm going to put it on your plate. Is there something that, I mean, you're married. I'm not. I don't have a significant other who's off spending money behind my back. I don't share a bank account with anybody. I'm trying to flash back to when I was married, and there were some things that would certainly bug me, but you're in the throes of this. So let me put you in the hot seat.
Okay. I want to know, because the number is just, it stands out to me. $5,000 and you will reevaluate your relationship. I want to dive into that, and I want to know, because I think that's kind of crazy, right? Your divorce is going to cost way more than $5,000. But what is it really about? Like, somebody help me understand. Because I feel like there's something, you know, kind of boiling up.
Like they're looking for a way out and this is just the thing they needed.
Is it?
Oh, 801-575-TALK. 801-575-TALK. Let's see if we can, Get Dave's question answered next.
Dave and Dujanovic.
Get a quick blast of news each morning.
From Ukraine to Utah County.
You'll hear it first.
And accurately.
On KSL.
Listen weekdays between 5 and 9 to Tim and Amanda.
Utah's morning companions for news. Dave and Dujanovic.
I think Dave asked a very good question after our discussion with a professor at Utah State University about financial infidelity. $5,000 is what most Utahns say would cut their ties with their significant other if they found they were secretly spending that. Can we get that voice out of my ear? Was that Dan again? Are we good? Okay. No, don't worry about it. They're still talking to me. And your question to our callers is what?
What's going on really? Because $5,000, I get that's nothing to sneeze at, but is there something else going on where you're going to reevaluate? And I guess the question is, are you looking for a way out? Is it a breach of trust? Well,
I want to know, Dave, honestly, has it happened more than once? Like that the $5,000 is just the straw? Because we didn't talk about the $20,000 in secret credit card debt or the $10,000 you gave a friend. Phone calls.
All right. Let's jump out to Kenny in Lehigh. Kenny, what do you think? What's really going on?
No, I agree with you that if somebody is looking at ending a relationship over $5,000, there's definitely something else going on there. And whether that's, I think there's so many different things, because it could be that there's a significant lack of communication in the first place that led to somebody getting away with doing that to start with. I think if it was something that was an out of left field, like this is completely out of character for this person, something, this is a strange anomaly that has happened, you might be more willing to forgive it. But if it's more, this is a pattern of behavior, a pattern of miscommunication, a pattern of distrust, then that's where you start to say, this is it.
Yeah, no, great point. Thank you for the phone call, Kenny. Mark in Bluffdale. Mark, $5,000, that's where most Utahns are saying, I would reevaluate my relationship. I say I might have to reevaluate our sleeping arrangements for the next week. Like someone's might be on the couch.
Which she would not mind because the snoring wouldn't be happening in the bedroom. It'd be happening on the sofa. Hi, Mark. What do you think?
Yes, just background. I'm a divorce lawyer, and so I would tie in that these issues is to trust. People get divorced because they don't trust a spouse to be faithful to them sexually, or they change their behavior. But this is one more thing of trust. Like I can't trust them to follow that. But again, it's going to cost way more for me to fix this problem through a divorce than it is the $5,000. That's a pretty low amount.
I would say no. Come on, you don't do $1,000 divorces, Mark.
Well, if it's uncontested, but I tell any client if it's more than less than $5,000, it's not worth going to court for anything.
So, Mark, can we ask you this without divulging any names, any clients' names? Have you ever come across a case where somebody has been secretly spending money behind their partner's back and it's the reason that they're knocking on your door?
The $5,000 alone, that's never been a reason I've seen people get divorced.
Okay.
But it's one of many things they're throwing in is they're secretly hiding money or I can't trust them to spend the money that I want. Now, if both parties spend what they want, that's great. They have lots of debt, and that causes divorce too. But it's people need to be on the same spending habits or styles. If one person's a spender and one's a saver, it doesn't matter if it's $5,000 or more. It's, hey, we need to be on the same page, and I can't trust you to be on that same page if you're going to go off and spend $5,000 without discussing it. So it's always the root of something else. But I've never seen $5,000 is the only reason. It's always more than one.
Thanks, Mark. Mark, hang on the line so our producer can get with you. Let's go to emergency traffic. Heather Kelly in the traffic center. What do you know about that closure on I-15 in the Draper area?
The lanes are reopened now to two of them. The problem is, it's not a problem, but UHP or UDOT is doing a very slow roll of the people to come down this first pass as people reopen from 146 South, come down the hill into Draper where we've had that oil spill. Now, again, only two right lanes are open, but at least traffic is just barely starting to move. We can see them slowly go by the cameras right now. So hopefully traffic will start to see movement around the point of the mountain and into Lehi, but it still could take hours to clean all of that out.
Heather, yeah. Before you go, how far is the backing right now on I-15? So if people are stuck in it or thinking about coming into Salt Lake County out of Utah County, they got to know that.
Yeah, we're about 8 to 9 miles backed up, so it's going to take hours to clear them all out.
Heather, thank you for the update. That's great news. Let's see how quickly this starts actually happening.
We're talking about the secret nature of spending habits on the parts of some individuals who are in a relationship. We just spoke moments ago to Professor Schramm, David Schramm at the Utah State University, and he knows lots about, you know, relationships and marriage. And here's what he said.
All of us do things for reasons that make sense to us. And so when someone violates that, she's true. It's not about money in a sense. It's what money means, and it's about the secretive nature of that. And anytime we do something behind our spouse or their partner's back that we feel like we probably shouldn't be doing this, that's the first sign that don't go down this road.
Barry from Provo is calling right now. Barry, what do you think? Do you agree? Is it it's about something else?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is about something else. I mean, I think that there's obviously some underlying issues with the marriage if you are considering divorce over $5,000. But I do think it's a good point to consider how much money the household is bringing in. For example, I mean, if you're making $40,000 a year, $5,000 is a huge amount of money to you, right? Like, I mean, it might be that you're also in a lot of debt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's an important consideration to make. But I do think that it definitely comes down to communication issues. And I mean, we call this mild financial infidelity, right? Would you be okay with and not reconsider your marriage if there was mild emotional infidelity or mild physical infidelity? I think that at any level, you need to consider the relationship. I don't think you need to consider divorce, but you need to look at what's going
on.
I think that what
you just said was pretty amazing. I mean, you're right. When you put it like that, first of all, put it in context of how much a couple is bringing in every year. If it's 15 or 20% of their entire income, $5,000 is a huge hit compared to a couple that's bringing in $250,000 a year. It could really set a couple back. And the other thing, the mild financial infidelity. Wow, I hadn't heard it couched that way, but you're right. Good point, Barry.
Yeah, because you're right. $5,000, it means different. It means something different for every single person. But I think when I look at it, there is a certain amount of trust over a marriage and a relationship that you build up over the years. Is that kind of financial infidelity, is that going to hurt? Is that going to take away some of that good work that you've put in? Absolutely. This will damage a relationship. I'm not trying to minimize that at all. But I want to make sure that when we're having these conversations, there's a huge difference between having a good old fight and then getting a divorce, right? Let's not conflate the two and make sure that, you know, this can be taken care of with a good old fight. And instead of saying, you know what, I'm filing the papers tomorrow.
One of my takeaways I'm going to remember for life is what Professor Schramm said about, look, I asked him, okay, now you're stuck in this and now you need to come clean to your partner. Yeah. You spent $5,000, $10,000, or you have a secret bank account, or you have secret credit cards, or whatever the case may be. How do you do it? And he's like, it's a slow rollout. You know, the kids are to bed, everybody's well fed, mama's not on an empty stomach when you sit her down to tell her about this, or, you know,
you're not sleepy, you're not lonely.
Your husband isn't, you know, hasn't eaten for 4 days, you're on a full stomach. And you sit down and you have the conversation, and the conversation begins this way. I have something that has been on my mind that I need to talk to you about, and I want to have this conversation right now. I love that advice.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM. Utah's top local story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
Let's talk taxes.
When you say let's talk taxes, do you secretly mean let's complain about taxes? Because I love that. I love that conversation. I love going down that road.
So I was a little surprised to hear that the Salt Lake County's 2023 budget includes a tax increase. Here's KSL News Radio's Mark Jackson to explain what it means.
Under the approved tax rate, a home valued at $560,000 would be assessed $149.46 to support the library. Approximately 880,000 people, they say, live within the boundaries of the county library. Two-thirds of those are active library cardholders, making it one of the busiest library systems in North America.
Blame the library.
Yeah, property taxes are going through the roof, at least where I live. I'm in Davis County. This doesn't affect me directly, but I think this is the curse of saying yes to everything. Every time there's a bond that comes up, hey, do you want a new library? Do you want to fund an expansion? Do you want the library is sweet. Like, who says no to the library? Nobody. And that's why you're getting hit in the nose. How much did he say? For a library?
I've heard all kinds of amounts. We got Councilwoman Amy Winder Newton live on the line with us. We'll get to our conversation with her, and we'll ask her that in just a moment. But for me, it's not so much about the property taxes going up. I need a little bit of an explanation as to why brick and mortar libraries are still a big thing. Look, at every librarian in the state is going to hear this and think I'm anti-librarian. I'm not. You're wonderful. It's, you know, libraries have certainly been a big part of my kids' lives growing up. But now every book I read, I download off the Salt Lake County Library's free app. It's free. And I read it for free. And then I return it without even leaving my sofa in my living room. So, Amy, good morning.
Hello. Here I am, willing to be the poster child for tax increases. Thank you for calling and inviting me to be on your show.
Well,
we just put some words in your mouth, didn't we?
Did our producer tell you, like, we wanted to talk about, you know, Wheeler Farm or something and all the field trips there? No, we want to talk about the library and the tax increase. Look, I am impacted by this. I live in Salt Lake County. I've lived here in Salt Lake County since 1990. Let's start with this. I'm a little confused about the amount per household.
Yeah.
So can you start with that, Amy?
Yeah, and in fact, I don't know where the number came from that whoever reported.
It was Mark,
said,
yeah,
because,
right.
Yeah, it's for an average home worth $560,000, the tax increase would be $30 a year or $2.50 per month. And just so you know, so the library budget is a little bit different. This is not the same as the Salt Lake County countywide budget. We didn't raise taxes for your countywide Salt Lake County budget this year at all. The library is a separate line item on your property tax statement. And the reason why is because Murray and Salt Lake City already had a library system in place. And so they have their own system and they pay for that out of a tax, but also out of their general fund for their cities. We can't use any countywide funds for our library because that wouldn't be fair to Murray and Salt Lake City residents, right? So we have the library as its own line item. It only can be funded with property tax and any fines we may collect. So the question is, do we value libraries as a community? And I'll tell you, to answer your question, Debbie, on why do we still need brick and mortar?
Yeah.
We really are, you know, we're evaluating that for sure, but we have parents who go in the morning for story time with their toddlers and their preschoolers. And while they're there, they check out a book. I did that when my kids were little.
Oh,
every
I did
single
too.
Week we would
I mean,
go
we
in.
Were totally and on so, the front row of the puppet shows all the time at the library. I mean, I know. I know that they're a big deal for a certain segment, particularly when your kids are little. But now that my kids are grown and in their 20s, I'm just old and I'm seeing less value in the local library, the brick and mortar library.
But let me tell you why it's still impacting you. We just built the Kearns Library the last few years. It is a hangout spot for a lot of kids who are latchkey kids who don't have somewhere to go after school and need a safe, happy, healthy place to go. And they go to the library. So each community kind of uses it for different purposes. There's some libraries where for people in that community, that's their source of the internet. That's where they go to apply for jobs, to get homework done. So there's different needs for different communities, for sure. And I agree with you, Debbie. It depends on your stage of life, right? I mean, totally. I go to the library when I need to pick up books. I run in, I grab the books I've reserved, I check them out, and I go. And I don't just hang out there like I used to when my kids were young. But we have found, as we've talked to our Salt Lake County residents, that they value libraries. And how it still impacts us, even as grown adults that don't have children, is we want these kids in our community to have a safe place to go. And we value education and literacy. That helps decrease criminal element later on, or poverty, or some of these other ailments that you do end up paying through your taxes. And so a library system is a valuable part of a community for so many reasons. It helps keep our community strong.
Okay, a couple things. Number one, I would like to introduce both of you to Audible. Apparently, you guys have never heard of this before. Just download and listen to it. It's great. Also, way more expensive than a library. You say it went up $30 this year. What is the grand total? What would a Salt Lake County resident be paying for their library? Like, not month to month, but just kind of in a year, this is what it will cost you.
Yeah, so I think that's the number Mark gave you, was $150 or whatever. That's what the total all-in is. That's not okay. The tax increase portion. That's the all-in, what an average resident is paying for the library system.
So I guess ultimately what I'm asking myself is, am I getting $150 worth of use out of the library?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can ask that, but yeah. Then you can look at the other community benefit that comes from having a library system. And honestly, we've got people in our community who need it for other things that maybe those of us who aren't in poverty or don't, you know, we do have internet access at home. We don't need it for. So, you know, we are looking at a wide range of need there.
Yeah, I think that's. Amy, you bring up, and by the way, if you're just jumping on the line and you hear Salt Lake County Councilwoman Amy Winder Newton, she's talking with us about the library and the slight increase. It's $2.50 a month increase per $560,000 home for the library, specifically for the library system. And look, I never thought I could get confrontational with you over libraries. So, like, I don't want to become across as the Grinch here, but you bring up some very valid points. That have escaped me over the years as I've gotten further and further away from taking my little ones to the library, because I don't have little ones anymore. That is the internet access. That is, not everybody in the world has a laptop at home, but you can go to the library and use a computer there. I do tend to like paperback or hardcover books over reading books online. I'm just lazy now, so I don't get up and go to the library to check out a book. But there are some valuable considerations in the library. Is there any consideration at all, Amy, about maybe moving some of these library locations to, like, for example, city halls? We're building all these beautiful city halls. I mean, would that be a consideration that the county could share that expense with the local community, local city, and build a library there?
Well, I love this question because it's actually not city halls, because then you've got city and county kind of mixing and that gets interesting. But what we're looking at right now as a county, we're doing some studies to see what happens if we need, or if we made it possible for you to obtain other county services at the library. I mean, what if you went to the library to get your passport or your marriage license?
Yes.
What if you were able to use, you know, the library for other county services, to pay your taxes or things like that. And so we're actually evaluating that right now as a county of, we call it a new way to work. Do we need a big county building, or can we have other places to make it more convenient for our residents? And so we're actually studying that right now.
I love it. Thanks, Amy.
I appreciate it. Amy Winder Newton, thanks for joining us from the Salt Lake County Council. What I hear, Debbie, and this is, again, diving into this conversation, is a library worth it? Well, what I'm hearing is maybe the library itself per se is not worth it. The books, the checking out is not worth it. It's more of a holistic usage center, more of a multi-purpose mm-hmm. use center versus a library. And that maybe that has more value in my mind than just a library, because again, every school has a library. Every elementary, junior high, high school has a library. Then we have the county library. Maybe we have a city library, like I do in my city. We have a Kaysville City Library that is, you know, we have a county library. There just seems to be some redundancy on these books that nobody's...
We have to check and see if Heather Kelly is still in the traffic center. Are you still on the headset, Heather? Is it Lynn? Lynn Thomas, you there for us? I'm just wondering how long that backing still is. The last time we talked to Heather, it was miles and miles long. Is Lynn available to just jump on? We'll get with him in a moment. Dave, you have a family member you forgot to warn about the backing on I-15 because the freeway was closed. It's been closed for 12 hours.
Uh-huh.
It just reopened. Lynn, you there?
Yes, I am.
How long's the backing?
The backing's about 7 miles now, all the way from 146 south down to Lehigh, prior to 2200 north, and barely crawling along with a whole lot of semis going up there now. So that major oil spill, a gas spill, and several vehicle crash has one of the worst accidents of several years. That's been there for 12 hours, I'm told. Right. So looking a little bit better for those in that mess right now, but it's going to take a little while. Once you get up to 146 south, you're getting a little bit of speed going to, in those two lanes, but still very, very slow down there in Lehigh.
Thanks, Lynn. We are watching the traffic camera now here in studio, and it's just, I don't know, it was like 6 or 7 cars at a time in a kind of a cluster of cars, and they look like they're doing freeway speeds, Dave, but you just got a alert from your daughter.
Debbie, I'm in so much trouble right
you
now.
You owe her.
I'm in so much trouble.
Obviously owes you lunch. Tell everybody what you did.
She just sent me a text. Dad, I've been stuck in this traffic for 4 hours.
Oh my goodness.
I've known about it since 5:30 this morning, and I didn't text her.
Because she's driving to drive from Utah County into Salt Lake County, and it was at one point this morning, the Utah Highway Patrol got on the air here at KSL News Radio and said, stop coming from Utah County to Salt Lake County right now, because we not only have the freeway closed down because of that spill, oil spill, gas spill, 1,500 gallons. We also have all the side streets that are a mess because everybody's trying to get off the freeway. And we witnessed on the cameras people on the on-ramp trying to get on I-15 in the Lehigh area heading northbound, figuring out the road had been closed down and had been closed down for hours, and then making a U-turn on the off-ramp to head back in the opposite direction on the freeway. And I don't know what their intention was once they got back on the freeway, Dave, because that's a whole nother disaster as cars are coming in. But look at that backing right now. Your daughter's stuck in that.
Yeah, she's somewhere in there. Absolutely in there. I think it goes back to St. George. It kind of stretches.
Yeah.
That is just brutal.
A reminder to have more than a granola bar in your car. On a wintry day when traffic is potentially shut down. And also, keep it on KSL News Radio. Heather Kelly, Lynn Thomas, both doing a remarkable job, and our whole entire traffic team all morning long. The minute I woke up, I 5 a.m., I started listening, and they've done a remarkable job keeping everybody updated. Adam, I don't know where you're from, but do you have a library in your neighborhood? And am I up in the night? Let's get back to the question. Am I up in the night for not being in love with brick-and-mortar libraries anymore? Did we lose Adam? Oh, Doug, are you there? Sorry, Doug.
I am.
Okay, I skipped ahead. Yeah, we can hear you. What do you think? Am I up in the night, in love with brick-and-mortar libraries?
Well, you are, and to correct Dave, though, you were talking about the Kaysville Library. The Kaysville Library actually is a branch of the Davis Library System.
That wasn't always the case, though, right?
I don't think... connection. It's actually not owned by the city. That's actually part of the Davis Library System.
Okay.
So that they're all under the county library system for all of Davis County. However, with that being said, there is a need for the library, especially people who do not have access to computers.
Yeah.
There's still people out there who do not have access to computers. And personally, I like to go to the library. I like to check out books, and then, you know, because I only read a book once, so,
you don't have a big old collection.
I get it once, you know, keep it for a week and a half, you know, 2 weeks, and then, you know, take it back, and then I'm on to the next book. So I think they still have some value to them.
Okay.
Doug, thanks for the phone call, and Jill in West Haven, do you have any strong feelings about the library? Are you all in? Are we going to get anybody that's kind of with Deb and I that think, You know, maybe the library's time has passed. What do you think?
Nope, I disagree. I think the library is awesome. I don't have little kids anymore, but I have a grandbaby, and it's fun to take her. They have lots of activities. Plus, we just went last night to one of the Salt Lake branches and used their multi-purpose room for a meeting that we could not have on the job site.
Okay.
And so they rent those, or not rent, but, you know, you can
reserve them or
sign up for those. Yeah,
you know what
schedule them and use them for that.
Well, thanks for the phone call, Jill, from West Haven. There's another aspect of the library I miss a little bit, is that they usually sell books on the cheap once they're done with them, and they have this little – the library I used to go to have this little room where they're on clearance price. They're like a quarter, like 25 cents, 50 cents, at least back then. But I don't know about what inflation's done to that. I haven't bought one in a while. I do everything right now on the library's free app. So I read the books that I check out online. But to Doug's point, not everybody has a computer. So you guys are making some really valid points as to why these brick and mortar libraries are still of value to a lot of families. Is it Adam? Are we to Adam now?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I called on you a little earlier, Adam, but here we are. So am I up in the night about the library?
I think you are. There's more to it than just books.
Do tell. I mean, I know there's the puppet shows. I've took my kids to plenty of those.
The new ones have lots of plethora of stuff. They've got sewing machines. They've got all kinds of stuff there.
Where's this?
You can get there's sewing machines.
Sewing machines? So I can...
I actually heard there was a 3D printer.
3D printers. There's a 3D printer, a few of them. There's lots of stuff. There's classes. You can take classes there. There's lectures. People do lectures there. And just so you know, when the first came out, when we first had libraries, that's where the community went to debate, believe it or not, politics. Debate. You go there to debate. You go there to promote your, you know, new politician.
Yeah. So use it as a community center.
Word. Yeah, that's what it's there for. It's a community gathering of knowledge and prosperity. It's there for us to commune. It's other than a church. I mean, people would think that you go to the church and you feel like you're communing. Just so you know, knowledge is that's the direction we're supposed to go.
Now I feel like a loser, Adam, bagging on the library. But those are great points. I also did appreciate Councilwoman Amy Winder Newton jumping on the line with us and explaining how different communities use the libraries.
We just built the Kearns Library the last 2 years. It is a hangout spot for a lot of kids who are latchkey kids who don't have somewhere to go after school and need a safe, happy, healthy place to go.
Yeah, and if you look at it as a community center, okay, possibly. I could be intrigued. All I know is, I don't know exactly what I'm spending, but I know in the Salt Lake County area, Amy Winder Newton just told us, you're spending about $150 a year on the library. And my question is, are you getting $150 worth of use out of it? Now, some people are. I think every one of our callers, you're probably getting $150 worth of use. I can tell you I have not been to my library besides dropping off my ballot in 15 years. So you add that up, how much money I have contributed to it, and I certainly haven't gotten my use out of it. And I'm telling you, that is not a full parking lot day in and day out.
Maybe you need to go there and hem a pair of pants with the sewing machine that's on site. Didn't know that existed. Thanks for your phone call. Straight ahead, we're going to return to our top national story. Brittany Griner, NBA star Brittany Griner released from Russian custody this morning.
She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home after months of being unjustly detained in Russia.
President Biden making the announcement. You heard it here first on KSL News Radio at about 6:30 this morning. Straight ahead, U.S. Marine Paul Whelan was not released from Russian custody, and he has been releasing statements about this from prison. Dave, we're going to get into that. You've been watching these prison these statements kind of come up on the screens here, the national news networks. And
Paul Whelan does not seem pleased that he was the one that was left behind.
Checking out.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM. KSL's top national story, special coverage with Dave and Dejanovic.
About 6:30 our time this morning, I looked up at the monitors in the newsroom, and there was President Biden speaking on the release of Brittany Griner, WNBA star, now released from a Russian prison, said to be on her way home. And standing to the left of President Biden was Brittany Griner's wife.
So over the last 9 months, you all have been so privy to one of the darkest moments of my life. And so today I'm just standing here overwhelmed with emotions. But the most important emotion that I have right now is just sincere gratitude.
I'm not trying to make this sound light, but I come from a sports world where there are trades, you know, from one team to another. And when you're making a trade, you're looking for equal value, or at least in the ballpark of equal value. And who we gave up? We gave up the Merchant of Death.
Victor Boot from Russia.
I mean, we gave up one of the, you know, world's most wanted men back in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Like, he was on the list. The world's most wanted. And we gave up that for a basketball star, which I'm grateful to have every American. But what happened to the other Americans that are still there? The Mark Whalens of the world, the Mark Fogels of the world, the Sarah Krivaniks of the world. You don't even know who those people are because they're not famous.
Paul Whelan, U.S. Marine, in custody, in a prison, in Russia. Since 2018, he has been speaking to a CNN reporter over in Russia. He is still in custody. Here's what he's been saying all morning long about the release of American Brittany Griner. He was not freed. We thought it was going to be a two-for-one swap, that he would be part of that swap. He is not.
They've always considered me to be at a higher level than other criminals. Of my sort, and for whatever reason, I'm treated differently than another individual here from a Western country that's also on a charge of espionage. So even though we're both here for espionage, I'm treated much differently than he is, and my treatment is also much different than others held for espionage at other prisons.
Russia has called Paul Whelan a spy. And for some reason, he doesn't get included in this conversation or in this trade because what? A spy? Whatever the justification is, but they think a spy is too valuable to turn over for, an arms dealer.
The Merchant of Death. Frederick White is a professor of Russian and Integrated Studies at Utah Valley University. He's live on the line with us. Let's talk about the prison or the penal colony for starters. You're so familiar with what goes on in Russia, Professor White. What do these penal colonies look like? How do they operate?
Thank you for having me. So the penal colonies have a long history. They go all the way back to Imperial Russia, when basically the Russians used kind of their remoteness, if you will, and harsh climate to contain prisoners. They didn't have to put them in cells the way we might think of. They could just put them in really faraway locations, and you know, nobody was going to escape, and if they did, they would probably die trying to get anywhere. The Soviets then expanded that system, and what they added to that system was kind of a work element. And so the Soviets imprisoned a lot of political prisoners on top of criminals, and then they worked many of those people to death, right? This was in how the Soviets industrialized rather rapidly during the 30s. And if you want a taste of that, you can read Alexander Solzhenitsyn's One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, which is the first Russian book to uncover this prison system. Or you can look at Varlam Shalamov's Kalima Tales, which is a much more harsh look at that. To move to the present day, the Gulag system was reduced following Stalin's death, but yet some of those prisons remain. And Greiner was in one of those. And so she wasn't in a prison cell like we would think of, as I said. She was probably in a barracks with a prison population that was split up into four different groups. They probably had a work detail, something they had to do. But they were still out away from Moscow proper. As I understand it, Greiner herself was 300 miles kind of south, southeast of Moscow. This is where Paul Whelan, not the same prison colony, but the same area that Paul Whelan is also being held.
Okay. What are the conditions? Are they just brutal conditions?
Well, I don't think prisons or a prison colony anywhere is probably lots of fun. Certainly not in Russia. No, I mean, the conditions are not fantastic. Obviously, the Russians, the basis behind the prison colonies, or at least from its Soviet system, they weren't really trying to sustain people's lives very much. I think that most Americans would figure that that was a pretty brutal living condition.
Professor Frederick Wright of Utah Valley University, he's a professor of Russian Integrated Studies, live on the line with us. We're talking about the release of WNBA basketball player Brittany Greiner. Russia released her in a prisoner swap today. She's heading home to the United States. And the swap included the Merchant of Death, a Russian who was well known around the world many, many years ago for dealing in illegal arms, Professor White. In the 30 seconds or so we have left, what's your take? What does it mean that they released Greiner and not Paul Whelan with Greiner?
Yeah, I'm not privy to the State Department's negotiations, but I think the Russians probably understood that Greiner has a name recognition and a value, that they thought they could exploit. So they got Viktor Budaut, who they've wanted to get out for quite some time. He's been in prison for 15 years, but he had about 10 more years left on his sentence. So they got Budaut, they gave back Greiner, and they still get to hold on to Whelan. And Whelan's in for espionage, which the Russians would say is a much harsher or a worse crime than bringing in vape cartridges with marijuana. So I'm sure the Russians have their own side of the story. But from the outside, it looks like the Russians got the better end of the deal.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time, Professor Frederick White, who is the professor of Russian and Integrated Studies at Utah Valley University.
So, Dave, I became a little curious when we were having our discussion with the professor there about, like, okay, so how is Greiner getting home? And then what happens to this Merchant of Death? Like, how do we get him back to Russia? And the New York Times just updated an article. They said the United Arab Emirates played a role in the place that she arrived in Abu Dhabi on Thursday by private plane from Moscow. And then Viktor Boot, who is the Russian arms dealer that the USA released this morning, flew on a private plane from Washington, D.C. And then there was an exchange that happened on the tarmac.
Wow. It's like right out of a James Bond movie.
Right?
This is crazy.
Dave and Dujanovic.
You can catch info anywhere.
But KSL News Radio is a dependable source.
We invite you to join us weekdays between 5 and 9.
Tim Hughes and Amanda Dixon.
Utah's morning companions for news.
We're going to go back to the traffic center right now with Lynn Thomas, who's been standing by and covering this craziness on I-15 all morning long. It was closed down for 11 hours, Len.
Yes,
I-15 northbound.
Yeah, crazy, this major oil spill. As you've been saying, hundreds of gallons of oil and gasoline from ruptured gas tanks from two of the other vehicles involved in this crash had to be cleaned up. Incredibly hardworking UDOT crews have been up all night and into the morning doing this. A little while ago, the traffic started moving northbound I-15 in two lanes from Lehigh's 2200 North. And this is crawling slowly, about 5.5 miles of slowing up to this closure at 146 South. It is now open. Once you get to 146 South, it opens back up to three lanes of traffic. So it's going to take a little while to get this traffic moving. So a little bit of patience will be good in there.
Len, I couldn't make out exactly what they'd been throwing on the freeway to try to absorb all of that fuel. Was it like sawdust or clay or dirt?
Kitty litter.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Well,
I guess that's what we use, right?
Yeah, it's we're just kind of theorizing that it's something akin to kitty litter. It's probably something highly industrial and much more strong than that. Something to soak up all of that oil, and to be able to do that in such a fairly quick manner is amazing.
Now, Len, just take us back about, 13 hours ago. This all happened when a semi-truck collided, jackknifed in the snow last night, right? And then, another truck comes over the freeway there, maybe doesn't see and it can't slow down in time, and then there's this, wow.
Yeah, just piled in there, and it started an effect that did that, and had a couple of cars that had their gas tanks ruptured in this, which is kind of a strange, random thing that could happen.
Really?
We're not driving Pintos anymore, but those...
those
tanks, oil and gas.
Yeah, but everybody was okay?
Everybody, to my knowledge, was okay. Good. I have not heard of any fatals, and that is pretty amazing.
Well, your coverage, Heather's coverage this morning has been phenomenal, because it wasn't only, just stay with us for a second here, Len.
Sure.
It was not only this I-15 closure. When I woke up and turned on KSL News Radio first thing this morning, we also had a closure of I-215 as well. And then we had another accident on I-15. So it's been a wild morning out there.
It has. And it started as I was in the traffic center last evening when that storm was gathering momentum all afternoon. And then it really belted south of Utah County. Northbound I-15 was closed in Nephi about 5 o'clock last night. And so we were looking in the cameras and looking at all the sensor boards, and it was stretching all the way down into Scipio and further points down there almost to Cedar City with this huge storm. And then all the way along, once you got up to Utah County, it was already pretty much emergency traffic all the way through Utah County, and BYU is playing UVU in Provo.
Oh, no.
And so,
it was everything.
Yeah.
It was the perfect storm for a real mess. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Len Thomas, we appreciate those updates.
Thank
and,
you so much.
Debbie, I can give you an update, a developing story from my daughter.
I need an Aubrey update. She was stuck in this for hours.
4 hours.
And she's not alone, obviously. It was up to 10 miles of backing at one point. It was a parking lot there. Is she out of it now?
She is finally out of it. She's at work. And again, I don't think she's listening right now, but I do acknowledge that this is totally on me.
Oh, you've
I could have told her about 4 hours.
Or she could have just tuned into KSL News Radio, because we had traffic updates
serves her right.
All morning long. I know people were turning around on the on-ramp when I was watching the traffic cameras at about 7:30 this morning. It's so dangerous to do that. It's so dangerous, because I wasn't sure what their...
What's your next step? Where are you going?
Well, you get back right on the freeway going the wrong way then, right? As you make the...
This is a problem, right?
They're just compounding the problem. I did ask you this question, and this is something I dealt with my kids, and sometimes I do it myself. Did you have a full tank of gas when she set out to work today and got stuck in traffic for 4 hours?
I don't know. She's a college student, so my guess is it was under a quarter, probably under an eighth.
Which, once you're stuck on the freeway and there is no off-ramp you can get to and you're running low on fuel, oh, my goodness. Well, it is moving now, so if you're sitting in it, you're listening to us, you just heard Len. He'll be back, of course, during Maria's afternoon news today. She'll have all of the updates. Len is on standby as well. I want to jump to this research, Dave, before we part ways for the weekend. I read it on KSL.com. Look, it's not the cure for the common cold, but scientists finally know why people get more colds and the flu in winter.
I'm intrigued, because I'd never understood that. Otherwise, everyone that lives in Alaska would be just sick perpetually. So why in the world does this matter?
Do you ever get a summer cold? I've had a couple, but mainly I get them in the winter.
I don't ever get sick, so I don't know.
Whatever.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You had COVID.
And I felt great.
Oh, goodness.
I felt great.
Remember that time we were on the air and you completely lost your voice?
Oh, yeah, that
was
funny.
You were really sick.
I sounded like Kermit the Frog eating a frog.
And you continued to deny that you were ill.
I'm totally fine.
And so I think we had to finally cut your microphone off and bump you off the air.
That's true. That was in the winter. Yep.
Yeah. So it turns out, according to what scientists are saying, that there's the air temperature. Okay, the lower the air temperature, it reduces the temperature inside your nose. So what ends up happening is it damages the immune response occurring in the nose. So when the temperature inside the nose is reduced by as little as 9 degrees Fahrenheit, that will kill nearly half of the billions and billions of virus and bacteria fighting cells in your nostrils.
I've got billions of virus and bacteria fighting cells in my nose.
I found this was very fascinating because I always kind of wonder, like, sometimes in summer I'm more worn down because I'm kind of staying up late because it's so light out and I'm going and I'm traveling a lot. So I'm mixing with other people who have all kinds of germs. But I usually only catch a cold in the wintertime. And I wonder if this is why, because, well, it was 28 degrees this morning. So I'm sure when I walked outside and I took a deep breath.
That froze your nose for sure.
I killed off a whole bunch of bacteria. And they say, I'm going to leave you with a sort of an unpopular take here. One of the things you can do to increase your ability to protect your nose and protect your immune system is wear a mask.
It's all about the mask.
Yeah, they have not come up with a cure for the common cold yet, but at least
I guess that helps, right? I mean, if you can fight back the bacteria and stuff that's invading your nose, that makes sense.
Yeah, and scientists are saying, look, we've never until now understood a reason for this phenomenon, but it turns out it's basically biological, that respiratory illnesses can infiltrate your body in the winter a lot better because, well, you know, the colder temperatures freeze out the good bacteria that fight them. I look at it like asteroids in the nose, right? It's like the bad bacteria is coming in, the virus is trying to get into your system. And then the good bacteria, if it's standing down because of cold weather, it can't fight back.
I didn't know this, but the team discovered as they were figuring this out that the nose is the main point of entry into the body. So if you're going to get sick, it's because you're sucking it through your nose. Immediately, the front of the nose detects the germ, and then before it hits the back of the nose, that's when it kind of gets a little too deep. So it's trying to battle the front lines in the front of your nose.
Do you feel like you get less sick than other people?
Yeah, I do.
Really? Because your family was kind of ill last week. You were running around town looking for NyQuil and DayQuil.
What's up with those guys?
But you never got sick.
I choose not to. I think it's a choice.
Or do you just stay away from them? You don't know.
No,
it's a true story?
Yeah, just good immune system, I guess.
Maria's up next. She's got all your day's news. I know they'll have lots of traffic updates on the backing that's still occurring on I-15 northbound as a result of that 12-hour closure on I-15 northbound in the Draper area. We had a couple of semi-trucks collide, and then there was a fuel spill and an oil spill. It's reopened. They're still backing. She'll also have an update on the Respect for Marriage Act. It's passed by the House this morning. It's on its way to President Biden's desk for signing.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.